Hi, my name is Ivana, and I'm a compulsive overeater and restrictor. It's interesting to be here in this capacity. It's the first time I have shared at this meeting in this way. I have been attending this meeting for, gosh, probably 2.5 years or so. Obviously, I share sometimes it during the actual meeting itself, but I am feeling very blessed and grateful to have enough time to be able to share at this meeting. And I'm super nervous in a way that I am not when I'm sharing in other places. And so bear with me. And I think what I need to do right off the bat is maybe just start with the quote that came to me. It's one of my favorite out of the big book. And it stuck with me from the very first moment I read it over, gosh, over 20 years ago now. Perhaps there is a better way. It's on page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us. And humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? And yeah, that calmed me down a little bit. Thank you all so much. So my eating career, as it were, my problematic eating career, my food as a solution career, started when I was I can remember having abnormal thoughts about food as early as I can remember. So, and I, for some reason, four has always come into my mind. I never sort of felt okay in my body. I always felt like it was too big, regardless. And, you know, to a certain extent, there was some messaging around that in my family of origin. I do remember that food and access to food was always a big deal, in my house. And how much I was eating was always monitored. And so, but I remember the very first time I really cognitively used food as a solution because I remember the first time that I had something that blew my mind. And it was this little green candy that tasted like grape and had purple, like sugary inside. And I had it, and it was at a corner store in my neighborhood. And wow, did I ever think this is so good, right? Like it just came into my body, and I was like, this feels great. This feels really great. And so then I get, you know, honestly, was there's nothing going back from there. You know, you know, I really know that once I found that solution, you know, it really helped with some of the, like I remember always being, I am, when I am in the food, I am a very scared person. When I have no solution, when I have no other solution, like the one offered to us in OA, I am an incredibly scared person. I don't remember a time in my life when I wasn't scared. I don't remember a time in my life that I didn't feel like I was absolutely not really part of the world, but also had to be forced into being part of the world. And I always remember having this feeling of other, like never in at home, never okay with myself, never okay with other people, and always acting and reacting on the basis of how much love am I going to get? When am I going to get it? And if I don't get it, what am I going to do to feel better about that? And so the solution from such a young age was eat. And I can tell you from the young age too, like once I started eating and then felt afterwards that feeling, it didn't actually make me feel any better, but there was at least this relief for the moment that I was eating. I wasn't thinking about me. The moment I was eating, I wasn't evaluating myself and my performance in the world. I wasn't aware of how other I really was or felt. And you know, my family was wonderful, honestly. Like they were not perfect, but they were wonderful. I had everything I could need. I was supported by my parents. I was offered so many opportunities that, other people were not given. And they tried really hard to support what was kind of showing up on the surface as like mental health issues. So, I was young, at a very young age, was diagnosed with panic disorder, and I was diagnosed at a very young age also with obsessive compulsive disorder with primary obsessions. I was I've had periods on and off my entire life of depression. They're just always there. What it comes down to is there just always seemed to be something wrong with me. I mostly, my most alcoholic food is sugar for sure. That is the one that I need to avoid at all costs. But there are other foods, of course, that would also fall under that category. And my most sort of alcoholic behavior is eating instead of feeling. And so those are the things that I have to just not do. That the I just really have to focus on just not doing those two things. And so I realized that my like I dieted, I gained and lost and gained and lost weight over the years. In my teenage years, I remember when I was 12, I was walking to school and these boys started singing Baby Beluga, and I hadn't really, I mean, I had known all this stuff, but I hadn't really kind of like clued in that other people my age were thinking that maybe I had a problem. And obviously, expressing it in what later would be helpful, but at that point, very unhelpful way. And I remember being just devastated, and so that was sort of my first period of restriction. Was that if I did that deliberately, if I stopped eating as much, then my body got smaller, and then I wasn't teased, and I wasn't, sort of seen as less than. And that continued on in high school, over and over again, and then in my last year of high school, I had mono, and so for like a month I couldn't. By physically, I just couldn't really eat. And then I thought, wow, isn't this amazing? Like, if I just don't eat, I look and people respond to me really well, I look at, pictures of me at that time, and like I can see why people were responding to me really, really well. And I also had a second incident of violation at that time. So, life felt unsafe for a lot of it. Life was in periods unsafe. Thankfully, I'm so incredibly blessed that none of that came from my family. My family was always a safe place for me. It was the outside world that was not safe. It was other people who were hurting me, and there are other people who are going to always hurt me. And so, in university, I actually went to the flip side. So I had this year of kind of restricting in grade 12. And then in my third year of university, I moved to a different area in British Columbia. And it was like I moved away from home, and any of the external monitoring that I had set up, for myself was not there. And it was like a free for all for me. Like I would just every night bake a whole batch of cookie dough and eat it. I would, just constantly binge one after another. And then my mental health started to decline as well on top of that. So I ended up having to move home, and have my parents take care of me. And yet at the same time was really focused on, my career and doing what I thought I needed to do in order to be a successful, good person. And I remember being really clear that there was a formula for that, and as long as I ate, I could manage the formula, anyways, I started away, gosh, I don't even remember the year, but I know I've been in and out of the rooms for 20, I'm 50 now. I know it's been probably been about 25 years on and off, that I've been in the rooms. And I had a period in 2013. I haven't had a period of what I felt at the time was abstinent and abstinence, and I was following the OA How food plan, and I realize now that for me, and just for me, because there's no judgment here for anybody else and their food plans, for me, that was restriction to an nth degree. And it was like, yeah, I started to jog. I started to follow that food plan. Within a year, I had released 130 pounds. I was looking like I was like the OA super child. People wanted to know what I was doing. You know, all of this stuff, the same way of measuring myself, right? The same way of always measuring myself. And I came back to the rooms because I belong to another fellowship, and I'm incredibly blessed to have a number of years of sobriety in that fellowship. So I never left 12-step, and I always knew, like, once you come in here and you relapse, you know, you guys are always there. It's in the back of your mind, and it's ready for, you know, and I know you guys were there waiting for me and feeling this sense of like, I know I have to get back to there because I know that I'm just kind of, you know, skirting around the real first issue, which it was food for me. Food is my first alcohol. And there are several moments. What brought me back into the room is that for the first time in my life, I had told myself always, like, because I was bigger, I didn't have a partner who loved me, right? And I would never find a partner who thought I was beautiful at my size. And I had all these things set up for all these, like these rules, of course, right? And then I found myself having a partner who absolutely thought I was stunning at this, at a bigger size. And I had a wonderful job, and I had friends who loved me, and I had family who loved me. And I was like, well, then there must be some other problem, right? And I can't believe that it took me that long to understand that. I had like lots of literacy in the big book and lots of, like, you know, all of that, but I had no emotional, true, honest connection to that, which is that I'm powerless over food, and that when I'm in the food, my life is unmanageable. And I also realize that I'm powerless over restricting. Restricting makes me feel wonderful. Like, I love the feeling of it. I feel powerful. I feel effective. I feel like I'm achieving things. I feel like I'm a good person, and I'm going to get everything my life desires. And I'm sure there's probably also a physiological piece of that too. I think sort of being in some of that rapid release brings out something in my body, and I just get quite high off of it. Yeah, I guess really what it came down to, the reason that I finally now have 200, thank God, have 266 days of abstinence, is because the one thing that I wanted to do, I had moved in with my parents in 2023, I think, 2024, and I wanted to be there for my father when he died. And my father had chosen, in Canada, you can choose to die with assistance. And he had chosen to die with assistance. And I had worked in hospice and end of life care, so I knew that I really wanted to be there at the moment when he passed, and I wanted to support him, and I really wanted to do it abstinent and fully abstinent, sober and abstinent. And I couldn't, and I didn't. And I was so incredibly disappointed with myself that I wasn't able to help him meet, like, where he was going, which for him, because he was an atheist, was nowhere. But for me, it was a little bit different. And I wanted to meet that. I wanted to be there for him, and I wanted to be totally able to be there, and I couldn't. And I'm not saying that I was a bad person for that. There's many reasons why we could not, maybe not always 100% be there when our father, you know, our beloved father was going. But I felt that that was a disappointment, and I was really profoundly disappointed in myself, and I was really profoundly aware of how powerful the disease was. Because I was so clear that I wanted that, and I wasn't able to do it. And then I just one day, I think quietly, just stopped. And I think it took me a couple of days maybe to tell my sponsor, my wonderful sponsor, because I kind of knew that 2 days was nothing. Like, I could get 2 days or three or four, but it was kind of like after a week, I was like, okay, And
Five
I
minutes,
really
Alana.
did, thanks so much, Kate. I really did what I was supposed to be doing. I read the big book. I did the suggestions. I reached out to people. I felt instead of eating, and I did what is my favorite, actually my thing. It's is a step 10, like spot check inventories are like literally have saved my life, not metaphorically, literally have saved my life, and probably my loved ones' love of me and and a whole lot of things. So looking at how I have been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and fearful for me is key to maintaining my sobriety, because it is all about me. Like when I am the disease, it is all about me, and nobody else exists there for me unless they're doing something or being some way for me. And I am like, when I'm in the disease, I am paranoid. I believe that I can feel other people's feelings and that their feelings impact me. I believe that I'm a victim. I believe that I am entitled. I believe that my resentments are valid. And I believe that I am always going to be at the mercy of other people and other things. And when I'm not in the food, I have this wonderful solution, which is, and I'm working the 12 steps, obviously, I have this solution, which is my higher power. And what I know is that this fellowship has brought me that. Call it a practical application for spirituality, and I have been looking for spirituality my entire life. I came out of the womb thinking that there was something greater, but had no language to talk about it. And this program has given me the language and has given me the very clear actions to take in order to feel that sense of my higher power. And because I have that, I don't feel scared as much. I was always scared. Now I get scared sometimes, and I know what I need to do. If I can't do it myself, I need to reach out to somebody. I need to do my work. I need to reach out to my sponsor. I need to somehow be honest about where I'm at and what I'm doing. And then I need to be of service, and then I need to forget myself. I very much need to forget myself because myself gets in the way really quickly. I can unsurrender myself within minutes of being awake, you know, and I will forget entirely that I'm not supposed to be running the show, because we know what happens. I know what happens when I run the show. It's not good. You know, I it's not good. And so yeah, and so I know that this solution is the one that will keep me able to be of service to you all, keep me able to love you, and keep me able to be loved by you, because that's another thing that I didn't think was possible, was to be loved by a bunch of people that didn't know me and that I didn't have to work really hard to deserve. Like that is a new thing for me. And so, you know, and being in this fellowship has brought me solutions otherwise in my life too. Like I realized that I was so scared and everything felt so weird because I'm on the autism spectrum, right? Like the thought that it could be so simple, right? These solutions that we have are so simple in these programs. It wasn't that I was a horrible mental health wreck. It was that I just really am different. The way that I'm made up is different. The way that I think is different. Everything is kind of a formula for me. And I'm able to use that in a way that works really well and works in ability to make me show up and be there for people. And yeah, and I'm just so incredibly grateful for all of you. My sponsees, my sponsor. Oh my God. What I would have done without her. And you know what? She never did. She never told me she was leaving if I didn't do this or that, you know, because it's the first time ever in my life I had someone who wasn't evaluating me in that way, you know, and I needed someone who wasn't going to evaluate me. Because, you know, I don't know. I just needed to know that I wasn't going to lose something if I didn't do it perfect. You know, and it turns out I did, thankfully, for now, seems like I might have taken step one perfectly, which is all I needed to do. And the rest of them, need to do to keep close to my higher power. And then I stay sober by doing 10, 11, and 12. So that I can see as my time. And thank you so much for asking me. And thank you for being here. And I love you all so much. Thank you. Thank you for my sobriety.